Again, this will bring it all crashing down. By building a support network, you'll be offered reams of useful information, historical grudges, friendships, business missteps, human resource traffic. All these factors can provide you with a clear picture of the people in play and who your strongest and most influential allies might be. Somewhere in that network is the wormhole through time and space, the one that opens the doors you wish to be opened. Be clear in your communications. It's important that you be clear what you need from others so that they understand exactly what's being asked of them. If you're not clear, you could have a long discussion and even share meals together and yet end up with nothing that moves your cause forward. Even if this is what shakes out from your explorations, you're still spending your time well as you're learning about an ally and what gets them interested and keeps them interested. If you're learning about that person's goals, dreams, and aptitudes, and this is all useful information. Further, it places you in a mentoring position, which permits the extraction of information in terms of team member placement. All time spent with people in your network is productive time because you're expanding your knowledge and your reputation. What you know about your people is currency. A solid team member is another stone in the pathway to achieving your goal. Values matter. Inspiration. By knowing what inspires people, you can build consensus toward achieving the goal you're seeking to enlist their help with. As said above, knowing about the people whose allegiance you're building provides you with valuable information about their part in reaching the goal you have in mind. Maybe an ally is an unsung hero, laboring thanklessly in accounts. Maybe this ally has a strong understanding of an accounting methodology that can help move your project forward. Finding out what drives and inspires people to reach beyond where they currently are in life or in your organization is leverage to enlisting supporters and network participants. You all have something to give one another. Recognition-oriented factors. Everyone likes to be recognized, but this is more important to some people than to others. Some folks fly just under the radar their entire lives due to a lack of ambition or being content with drawing a paycheck and going home at the end of the day unsung. Most of us aren't like that, though. We crave recognition for our contributions. It's helpful to be aware of this, and it's also helpful to take note of those who aren't receiving the recognition they deserve for the work they're doing. Bring these people into your circle and connect them with others like yourself, who are goal-oriented and seeking competent support. This sets you apart as someone who recognizes the talent in other people. It also supports the project of moving toward the goal or goal you're striving to achieve. Strong talent on your team and on your side is the foundation of success. It also creates a network of appreciation for your recognition of that talent, and that's powerful, as it supports your own recognition as a supportive, attentive, and most importantly, influential leader. Relationships matter. Take the time to listen to people's problems, their life milestones and stories. Look at the baby pictures and be happy they're being shown to you, as this is a display of confidence and trust. Their lives matter, and your interest in the details of their lives makes you more than a co-worker or ally. It makes you a friend. People need to be heard. You don't have to offer them solutions to their problems or even advice. All you have to do is listen. This is a skill every leader has, the ability to listen to people. The listening ear is a powerful ear, invested with a communal respect. The time you spend listening to others, even when the discussion is of a personal nature, is time which creates a bond, which blurs the line between work and leisure. This is a value-added feature of business relationships, which builds bridges between you and those you listen to. It builds workplace perceptions of your character, adding another dimension to it. Your likability is a huge factor in your success and can't be underestimated. Likability is a major part of influence, as people are much more likely to be on the side of someone they like and respect. Chapter 10. Your Influence Skill Set. Clarity of Purpose. An important facet of the ability to influence others is your own clarity. Know what you want and have a clear plan on how you're going to get it. Whether you're working in sales and trying to improve the team's quarterly figures, or trying to encourage a student to be more diligent with study, or to set them on a career path, know what the objective is clearly. The only way you can succeed in influencing someone to behave in a desired way is if you are clear about what you hope to achieve. You don't get in your car to drive to a destination you've never been without setting the GPS. The same goes for the application of influence toward achieving a desired effect or goal. Know where you're going. Always be prepared in advance with the following: a list of prioritized objectives, a clear picture of the final destination, what it looks like. Preparing the environment. If you are seeking to reach agreement with someone, you need to make them feel comfortable. You also need to be relaxed yourself. At the same time, for effective communication, which is important when you want to influence someone's behavior, as this book is explaining, you need to make the environment conducive to your interaction. And you need to have a place, a planned sequence of events at that meeting beforehand. The best way to achieve this is to draw up a meeting agenda and circulate it to those who will attend one day prior to the meeting. In this way, everyone knows what to expect and what shape the meeting will take. The agenda should make clear what the goals of the meeting are. Checking off the items on it should move you closer to agreement, if not enable all present to reach consensus to move forward. The logical sequence of events represented by the following agenda is a function of a critically structured plan. Having a plan of such quality never fails to impress. Consensus building. In building consensus, you're making it clear you are open to suggestion, which you should always be, regardless of your single-minded focus on your ultimate goal. Building consensus employs those listening skills we talked about earlier. Hearing what people say and truly listening means you're not planning a response while they're talking. It means you're actively hearing everything they say. Subtext, word choice, and tone are all important, and so are your skills at hearing what's really being said. Proceeding with these skills in play can provide you with a basis for genuine and not false consensus. False consensus is reached when people are heard out but not heard. These are two entirely different animals. The first is condescending indulgence of hearing what no longer matters because a decision has already been made and the results of that decision imposed. Being heard means that influence on the final decision is still a possibility and that what's offered may result in concessions if it features actual merit. Being present to the input of others and being able to integrate their thoughts and suggestions into an existing plan is a function of leadership. Leadership is not imposed. Leadership is extended to others as a service. Consensus building is a way to bring forward the knowledge of the team and add it to your own. In the case of reaching agreement, it's the foundation of lasting relationships that won't later be ruptured by objections to not being heard. This is extremely important. Autocratic leadership is unwelcome and will not survive for long. It is a corrosive leadership style that is not sustainable. Creating rapport. When someone begins to enjoy your company, it becomes much easier for you to enlist their support. This makes it more likely they'll support your viewpoint in situations in which that counts. Allies are people who like and trust you. Your relationships are what will move your goals forward and create a foundation for your success and that of your allies also. People, while perhaps not being entirely aware of this on an intellectual level, know this instinctively. That's why it's important that you prioritize establishing rapport with others. It's the basis of strong allegiances. Part of creating rapport is establishing the common interest you hold with others. Taking an interest in them and offering them information about who you are is how this is achieved. Being too veiled about yourself makes you appear cold, calculating, and detached. Establish that you're open and also a person who can be trusted. It's also important to establish ease with others, and one way this can be done is to mirror body language. You'll probably find, if you pay attention, that you do this anyway when you've begun to establish rapport with someone. Mirroring body language sends the unconscious signal that there is a bond already established between two people and that they're on the same team. Mirroring speech patterns is another way of doing this. Repeating key words with enthusiasm at opportune times is another natural way we tell each other we're enjoying a conversation or agreeing with each other. Nod, smile, and respond positively when you sense a common theme emerging in a conversation. This sends the message that you're accessible on the most basic human level. Suggestions instead of demands. People routinely bridle at directives. In Western societies where individualism is a way of life, we like to believe in our personal autonomy as a value. That means it's not the best course of action to demand things from people. Much more effective is suggesting a course of action and building consensus based on the suggestion while being open to input and concessions to other points of view. This is the democratic way of achieving goals, and one that is completely manageable with the application of a deft hand. Here are examples of language that gives your listener the option to chip in, and yet still leaves you with wiggle room to go where you believe you need to go. Would you be interested in doing ABC? Could you be interested in doing ABC? I think we should do ABC. What do you think? Do you think this is the best way forward, or do you have other ideas? Leaving the space for opinion and input, while still advancing the validity of your own opinion, is the stuff of which influence is made. While you're providing people with a rationale for your point of view, your willingness to entertain amendments to that point of view only increases your influential power. Imposition rarely ends in anything but resentment. By building consensus through input and exchange, you'll still arrive at the goal you have in mind, but you'll do it with the support of a willing team signed on to the plan in question. That input will undoubtedly improve the original plan and will result in satisfaction on the part of all involved. Heightening your awareness. Awareness of the responses of other people to what you're saying is a key to influential action. What are their facial expressions telling you? Their body language and their word choices? What about tone and pitch? All these factors are rich with information that you can draw on to temper your pitch and to get people on your side. It can also cue you to back off and change lanes while you regroup and allow others their input. Active listening while employing body language, head nodding, eye contact, and assenting noises, yes, I see, is also about deeply engaging with what's being said and the complimentary messages being sent by the speaker. Your awareness in crucial situations of all the factors that create a communicative environment is of the utmost importance. You need to be aware of not only what's being said, but implications about what's intended, what's not being said, and the speaker's frame of mind. All these factors work together to form a more concise body of information from which you may draw in order to apply influential action. Matching the other person's communication style. Mirroring. While outright mimicry is obviously out of the question, you can certainly seek to mirror the communication styles of the people you're engaging with in order to help you establish rapport and common ground. Suppose someone looks at you for just a couple of seconds before looking down or past you and then looks back at you. This nonverbal style tells you something important about the person you're engaging. Sustained eye contact is undesirable, so mirror that in order to establish a comfortable level of communication that's implicitly agreed upon by both parties. This is an unspoken level of communication. By mirroring the tendencies of the other party, you're sending a message of respect and concession to the communication style being modeled. Summing up your agenda. At the conclusion of a business interaction, especially a meeting, it's important that you provide a summation of what you came into that meeting intending to do. In the course of your summation, you can acknowledge the importance of the feedback and input the exchange or meeting has provided, pointing out that the feedback received was pivotal in the development of your agenda and enriched it, gets people on your bus and ready to roll. When people feel their opinions are valued, they'll come along for the ride. They'll also form part of a team that's more cohesive than if you hadn't included and then acknowledged the role their input played in reinforcing your foundational agenda. The addition of the input of others to your narrative is a key component of consensus building as a part of influential action. It's a form of leadership outreach that not only strengthens the leader's position, but strengthens the agenda's integrity. Adding useful feedback and input can only build a better mousetrap. Good and successful leaders are keenly aware of this. Chapter 11, Scientifically Proven Methods of Nonverbal Influence. We've discussed the need to read other people's attitudes and perspectives by observing their body language as part of your influential arsenal. In any case, communication is a two-way interaction. You're also being read by those you interact with. Even if people don't boast the same level of awareness of nonverbal communication you do, they're still registering what you're saying without words. This is why it's so important that you master this aspect of communication in order to use it effectively. The perceptions of others are being shaped in every move you make, quite literally. This is true even if that perception is subconscious. That subconscious impression can impact the willingness of others to work with and cooperate with you, so learning to send the right message is crucial. Let's take a look at some aspects of body language and what they say to others, taking note of any habits you may model which need remediation. Dilated pupils. As psychologist Eckhart Hesse established in 1975, your pupils dilate when you are highly interested in what the person talking is saying. When you notice the dilation of someone's pupils, you're in a good position to move further toward your goal of influencing that person to take your part in whatever goal it is you have in mind. Strike while the iron is hot. And this applies to all spheres of your life, social, business life, and family. Body position. Being aware of how you're positioned in relation to those you're addressing is a fundamental skill. Are you facing them directly? Then it's important that other aspects of your body language don't indicate aggression, as facing someone directly can have that effect. If your hands are on your hips, your head is thrown back with your chin up, or you're standing too close to the other person, placing your hands in front of you with your fingers laced is a non-confrontational way of saying you're not a threatening person. Placing your hands behind your back is another way, but may also be interpreted as submission, particularly if your feet are close together. With feet wider apart, this arm and hand position is much more effective and signals openness. Turning away from someone may indicate that you're attempting to avoid a confrontation or that you're not truly engaged in the conversation. It can also mean you don't trust or like the person in question. Again, the position of the arms and hands is key to understanding the message. Folding one arm across your chest to hold the arm closest to the other party, as though half-hugging yourself, indicates shyness, as does wrapping both arms around the body in a self-hugging motion. Following your gaze. Someone who follows your gaze wherever you divert it is likely to be a progressive thinker. Conservative thinkers will not do this. The gaze will remain fixed and static. Following the gaze is also an indication of mirroring, practiced either consciously or unconsciously. As we've discussed elsewhere, mirroring is a sign of familiarity and common cause, which generally means that we're reaching out to the other party without words. Physical verbal dissonance. The person you are speaking to may present a calm and unruffled facade, or at least be endeavoring to do that. You may at first glance believe this person to be attentive to what you're saying, but there are signs that break through the facade. Being attentive to these can be helpful in determining whether the person you're talking to is either zoning out or is preoccupied. Crossing and uncrossing the legs when seated is one such indication. Restless hands are another, including constant movement of the hands, adjusting clothing, picking at the fingernails, rubbing the fingers and lacing and unlacing fingers. People who are not engaging with you, but who prefer to pretend that this is the case, instead of indicating an interest in ending the conversation, are either being unduly polite or deliberately deceptive. The eyes can determine which of these is true. Continual blinking is a strong signal that the person you're talking to is unwilling to continue the conversation, but even more unwilling to own up to their discomfort, boredom, or need to move on to something else as the time they're allotted to the discussion has elapsed. Stand with shoulders square. If you want the trust and support of others, you need to display resolute confidence. Maintaining a confident bearing involves good posture and squaring the shoulders while in conversation. When accompanied by similarly squaring your feet, this may seem confrontational, but can be very useful in establishing primacy in difficult situations. Body language like this is reasonably aggressive, but can be modified by placing the hands behind the back, or amplified by placing the hands on the hips, ultra-aggressive, as discussed earlier. Of primary importance is good posture, which sends a strong message of confidence and self-awareness. Leaning in. If you lean towards the person you're engaging, chances are that person is going to stop speaking and listen to what you have to say. This works whether you're standing or seated. This posture tends to make you appear dominant. The other person will read leaning in to mean that you're serious about what you're saying and that you expect to be heard. As you can see, your body language can influence other people. By more intensely focusing your message, complementing your words with supportive physical cues, being attentive to maintaining body language which correlates with your spoken message will not only make you more effective in your interactions with others, but signals your personal integrity. That's powerful. Chapter 12. The Social Psychology of Making Friends. Is it always easy to make friends in a new environment? Of course not. Sometimes it's extremely intimidating, and at other times downright hostile. Other times you feel like fish out of water. Everybody needs friends, and learning how to attract them is an important life skill we should all have. Human beings are fundamentally social animals who seek out the company of others, and there are very few exceptions to that rule. Choosing friends. Drawing the kind of friends you'd like to have. Here are three broad categories of friends. Hello, bye-bye friends. Acquaintances. These are the people who become your friends almost automatically by virtue of finding yourselves in the same environment, like your workplace, for example. You say hello, when you meet the first time in the day, and you say bye-bye as you wind up for the day. Once away from the shared environment, these friends, which are actually only acquaintances, rarely have any further involvement with you. They are nice to know, and they can be valuable allies due to their skills, but they are not necessarily the sort of people you can count on one hand. The Greeks say that you can count true friends on one hand. That's something to keep in mind. The average buddy. Drinking buddies, golf buddies, shopping pals, fun-time friends come and go. They share with you the things about life that make it fun, because they're fun. They like to laugh and enjoy your company. The lighter side of life is where these friends are going to pop up. These aren't necessarily people you engage in long conversations about the meaning of life or the reality of climate change. This is your loose social circle, developed over time, that enjoys a good time as much as you do. They come and go, and when you meet, a good time is had by all. But there's little in the way of depth in the relationship. Soul friends. These are the 3 a.m. phone call friends. You know they'll be ready to talk if you wake them from a sound sleep. These are the people you can go on a road trip with and not want to kill before you even hit Route 66. Long probing conversation, shared secrets, and mutual support are what these friends are all about. People that stick with you through thick and thin are soul friends. They're the people who have an intimate understanding of what makes you tick, and you return the favor. Some of these friends may be with you from childhood until death. Others you may pick up along the way. What distinguishes them from the hello bye-byes and average buddies is the depth of the relationship. You may go years without seeing a soul friend, but when you finally meet up again, it's as though no time has passed. You pick up where you left off because you know each other so well, and you were meant to be friends. These are the ones who are the hardest to find, and also the ones you long for. Soul friends are a reflection of who we are and what we really care about. Even more than that, they're the people we know we can always count on, because they know exactly who we are. Forming genuine friendships takes time. True friends are not made overnight. True, lasting, and intimate friendships evolve over time due to a genuine chemistry that exists between the people involved. Like romantic relationships, friendships are based in a fundamental chemical exchange which speaks to both parties like a song. You know when it's real. You can't create bonds. They're pre-existing realities that you can only recognize and act on. When true friends, soul friends, come into your life, the impact will be unforgettable. You'll know immediately that the person you've just met is intended to be with you in whatever capacity until the end of your life. Soul friends may not always be on our side physically, but they'll always be at our side spiritually. Wherever we are and whatever we're doing, we know they're there. We know we can pick up the phone, call, and find them ready to talk to us. These are the friends who are with us until we're no longer living and breathing. That's what makes them so special and so incredibly important. While we may recognize a soul friend at first sight, the world is not a place in which bonds are easily formed on this level. Soul friends, despite the distrust we've all learned to live with in the modern world, will look beyond that initial reticence and continue showing up. They won't give up. They'll seek you out, even when they don't know they're doing it, and you'll do the same. Over time, the bond will become unbreakable, and you'll have made a friend for life. Here's how you can become adept at making new friends. Don't overthink. Have you ever been apprehensive about meeting someone only for you to feel at home with them in the first 2 minutes of meeting? The fact is that if you're meeting a person for the first time, you have no idea how they are or how they behave. Why bother analyzing everything half to death? And again, assuming that meeting with a new person is bound to be scary only serves to make you fearful of the moment. The fear, then, makes you wary of the meeting, sometimes even making you detest it. In fact, for the most part, the reason you find yourself feeling somewhat shy towards a person is because of the fear you are harboring of having an encounter with them, or anyone else for that matter. Life makes us into individual silos of isolation. It makes us suspicious. Bad experiences with other people can stunt our ability to form the kind of bonds we're actually hungry for, the kind of bonds that last a lifetime. The best solution, therefore, is to disabuse yourself of the notion that meeting people you are not familiar with is scary. Stop overthinking about how to carry out that first conversation, how to connect with people who are actually the kind of people you need in your life. Overthinking, the forging of the most important connections in our lives, can make of us sad, isolated people who never really connect with others in the profound and lasting way that human beings were intended to connect. After all, who is to tell if the other party is not anxious about meeting you? We're all anxious in these latter days. We're all suspicious and nervous and continually asking ourselves if the people we meet have the right motivations, if they're genuine. Most of us are thinking the same thing. We've lost our trust in one another. So relax and create in your mind a positive image of that first encounter, a healthy image. In any case, there are plenty of people out there who may judge you unfairly on your first encounter. Everyone carries around a collection of cultural assumptions about the composition of people who are worth knowing. You have them, too. The trick is to open yourself to others and to allow the universe to connect you. It works very well if you allow it to happen. People worth having as friends know better than to judge a person on superficial grounds. In summary, fear is in your mind. Get rid of it. Let go of your accumulated fears and presumptions, and instead rely on your intuitive powers and your newly established ability to read people. You know enough to understand when people are honest or not. You've learned to read their mannerisms, their speech patterns, their facial expressions, and other nonverbal indicators about who they are. Trust yourself and your knowledge. You're more than ready to sift the wheat from the chaff, which means there's absolutely nothing to fear, no cause for suspicion or reticence. You're now more than ready to throw yourself out into the social whirl and find the kind of people who you deserve to have as friends. With your new skills rooted in the practice of social psychology, you're going to be able to establish rather quickly who is naughty and who is nice. The big bad wolf is out there, but you're not Little Red Riding Hood anymore. You're now a proficient and capable, socially aware person. No one's pulling the wool over your eyes anymore. With your new knowledge, it'll be easy for you to discern from the people you meet who's going to be the kind of friends you need in your life. There's no more guesswork because you know the ropes now. Move at your own pace. If you've been out of the social scene for a while, you may feel overwhelmed meeting new people as you ease yourself back into it, say in a seminar or even a party. However, you can preempt that problem by seeking out individual friends or acquaintances who you expect to be in attendance. You can meet with them before the event and catch up. This will put you more at ease with throwing yourself back into the social world. By the time you get to the event, you won't feel as anxious. For one, you'll know people who are going to be there. They can introduce you to other people. For another, your friends will be aware you're anxious. They'll shepherd you. Never be shy about reaching out to people you know for support. As we've learned in the course of this book, that's what friends are for. Just in case you're seeking to move back into having a social life again, after having been a little sequestered, here are some great ways to ease yourself back in. Begin by reaching out to acquaintances. The hello, bye-bye category is a good place to start. There is not a lot to lose there. Extend your social circle to include small groups of people you are friends with, just to observe the dynamics of the people relating. familiarizing yourself with being around groups of people again. It doesn't have to be scary. You can ease yourself back in. Expand your social circle by accompanying your friends when they're meeting with others. Make it known that you're hoping to move back into a more active social life. Most people would be happy to help you do that. Break out of your comfort zone and begin accepting invitations to mix with people, even those not in your close circle of friends. They say that you can't get into the sweetest fruit without going out on a limb, so climb out there. Learn to relish the opportunity to have new experiences with new people. You're learning more about yourself now and about other people. Why not get out there and put some of that knowledge into practice? After all, why shouldn't people want to meet someone as interesting and as intelligent as you are? Be proactive in socializing. Once you become reacquainted with the practice of seeking out new social connections, and when you're no longer in your solitary cocoon, you can begin to proactively seek out people you know and others who are new to you. You can begin branching out from the foundation that your friends and acquaintances have provided by moving further into the social milieu into areas that may be a little unfamiliar. For example, join a group or groups whose members share your hobbies or other interests. Enroll to participate in workshops or to pursue courses of study which interest you. It's quite easy to make friends in a group in which all the members share a common interest. Volunteer, and you'll be happy to serve as you make new friends in the process. While you're at it, you'll develop skills and aptitudes you may have hoped to make more viable. In the same way as workshops or groups, the common core of interest will provide a jumping-off point for bonding with others volunteering with you. Accept invitations to birthday parties, various celebrations, or other social functions. You never know who you'll meet at gatherings like these. Break through your own barriers. These may be preventing the type of people you want to connect with from connecting with you. Be open to attending social events and even meetups based on common interests. It also doesn't hurt to go out to the bar every now and again. There are people sitting in bars in every city of the world just looking for someone interesting to talk to. Maybe, just like you, they're looking for a way out of isolation or social stagnation. Your horizons expand when you demand that they do. No one is going to push them outward for you. Join online communities. While these may be located in cyberspace, but I know personally that they can result in real-world friendships. I've made many real-world friends on Facebook and other online communities. Sometimes it's easier to share your thoughts in writing than it is in spoken conversation. This is just one more avenue for making the kind of lasting connections you're hoping to. Bonus, you get to analyze the written communication style of potential new friends before you actually meet them. Take the initiative. There's no reason you should wait for others to approach you. They're just as reserved as you are, after all. Nobody is born knowing anyone else unless they're family, and even then, it's a bit of a crapshoot. You can approach people to start a conversation by employing simple questions like, "How are you?" and "Where are you from?" It's not hard, and you've absolutely nothing to lose. Be open to people around you, and you'll be surprised at how readily they'll respond to that openness. Remember, you're trying to break the ice between you and a stranger, so avoid over-talking. Be warm, but not overly insistent, and don't get discouraged if others don't respond immediately. Always try to put yourself in the place of the other person. Employ the lessons you've learned in this book to figure out where they stand and try to meet them there. Be gentle in your judgments of others, though, remembering always that we all judge one another. Take the time to let the person you're engaging reveal themselves to you, just as they're hoping you'll reveal yourself to them. Fight any temptation to be judgmental. No one's perfect, and that includes you. We tend to evaluate people quite harshly before we get to know them. This is a function of our survival instinct, which tells us that the fewer people we allow near us, the less potential there is for danger. But we're modern people, and we can do better than that. Besides, you now have in your command a variety of skills concerning nonverbal language that can help you sift through the people who very obviously aren't the sort of folks you're looking for. Remaining open to those we meet is the door to better friendships and more of them. Not writing people off because of petty complaints about the way they look or speak or dress is the best way we can become more flexible about who we welcome as friends, and that's the real secret. Sometimes it's the most unlikely person who's going to prove to be our very best and long-term friend. Everyone is looking for the kind of friends we believe we deserve, but we should always ask ourselves if we meet our own qualifications. You may find that in asking yourself this question honestly, you discover shortcomings in yourself you might not be willing to tolerate in other people. As I've said repeatedly in this book, knowing yourself is the key to knowing other people, so don't overlook amending your own challenges before you start writing other people off as potential friends due to your own. Conclusion. People are not as mysterious as they seem, and understanding them is not so much a science as an observational project. Your powers of observation, when it comes to navigating situations at home, with friends, and at work, are well within your ability to understand and command. It's all a matter of picking up the clues people liberally offer as we engage with them. Now that you understand how social psychology applies to your everyday life and how you can use it to improve your business, your career, and even your social life, you can start implementing the skills you've learned. You'll be surprised at how fast you'll see positive changes. You'll begin to experience better rapport between you and your coworkers and family, as well as your friends. You'll be more readily able to understand where people are coming from and be less inclined to walk out of any number of incidents and experiences frustrated, asking yourself, what are they thinking? You now have the tools to accurately read people's emotional and intellectual responses more accurately, and that makes you a much more effective and professional person. This book is the popularization of the amalgam, resulting from the melding of sociology and psychology, social psychology. While the two disciplines may still be at odds with one another, when they're reconciled, they form a system for interpreting the world around us in a very effective and constructive ways. By paying close attention to other people, you'll be able to more confidently move through life. The foundation of that ability is knowing yourself and being in command of the way you present yourself to others. By curating your public presence, you'll be more readily able to discern the undercurrents of other people's psychological and emotional landscapes, and to glean important information that will help you live a more successful and peaceful life. Human beings are complex animals, and you're no exception. Knowing your tics and mannerisms is the roadmap to understanding those of others, and your ticket to being able to successfully influence them for the good. As I've tried to make clear throughout this book, my goal is to make other people more easily interpretable to you. By detailing some of the primary ways people communicate nonverbally, I hope I've been able to show you how people are much less mysterious than they seem at first glance. Life is a mystery, but people aren't really. People are open books, offering you a wealth of information in the way they present themselves to you. The way they hold themselves, speak, arrange their faces, and move their hands. This is all free information, which can help you become much more successful at getting a handle on your interactions with others. You're now able to use the information in this book to be better at everything you do. Every day is a new beginning, and every person you meet represents a multitude of possibilities. Every single encounter is a link in the chain of your life. With the knowledge in this book, I'm hoping you'll come to understand how great an opportunity every connection you make is. Everyone you meet, from the bus driver to the CEO of your company, to the spin class instructor, to the barista at your local coffee bar, is an important link in the chain of your life. There's no one person who's going to make a difference to you, although they're out there, and they can be part of it. Your life is a series of encounters that lead to your goals and dreams, and each of those encounters is as rich as you make it. I hope the knowledge you've gained by reading this will lead you forward, and that your journey will be peopled with a kind of intelligent and lively folks that will make it a thrilling tapestry of experience. Sometimes the destination is fun to think about, but if we miss the journey on the way, there we miss out on the best part. Look up from the path, see who's walking with you, and then ask yourself, what do they mean by that hand movement? What does that facial expression mean? How do my own mannerisms mirror theirs? You'll figure out what it all means while you're on your way. Just don't forget to enjoy the journey. It really is the very best part. Manipulation. Proven Manipulation Techniques. Written by Pete Martin and Natalie Myers. Narrated by Sam Bogart. Copyright 2016 by Open Spirit Publishing, LLC. Production copyright 2016 by Open Spirit Publishing, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.